Rising everyone, Natalie coming to live, Spirit and Coffee, got my coffee here. My brand new awesome mug. I have another mug that my mom got me. She's just on point with these mugs these days. Okay, let's get started. So I have been reading out of the Emerald Tablet, Alchemy for Personal Transformation. It's an amazing book. I highly recommend that you purchase it if you're into alchemy or want to understand alchemy. You know, sometimes when you start in a particular subject or you don't know it, it seems in way over your head and you're just like, what? Really, all you need to do is understand language. Now, I was talking about language yesterday and how language shapes our reality, creates our reality, which is nothing new. You hear this everywhere. But people really understanding how to do it and having the experience of changing their reality through language, well, you have to understand the language in order to actually do that. So sometimes when you purchase books like this, you'll be like, what the hell is it talking about? That's the way I was sometimes. I was like, what? This is like over my head, but I didn't care. I still read it. And then I kept reading and reading, looking up definitions, trying to understand the word, the terminology, the etymologies of words. You start to understand the interconnection. You start to understand the language, and then you start to understand how to utilize that language so that you can shape your reality. So again, a key to creating or shaping your reality or living your divine purpose is understanding the language that you're using and knowing the words that you're speaking, right? So, and what you're spelling, right? Because it is spelling. So that's what we were talking about yesterday, okay? So I highly recommend this book, The Emerald Tablet, Alchemy for Personal Transformation by Dennis William Hauck. Amazing book. And I'm reading it on here, so it's probably going to take me decades to get through because I talk a lot. But here we go. So on page 7. So Balanus returned to Aegi, and I don't know how to say that, and lived in the temple of Asclepius, the Greek god of healing, who was alleged son of Hermes. The Caduceus of the staff of Hermes, Caduceus. Okay, sometimes I say words wrong too, so there you go. Beautiful. Was displayed on the outside of the temple, and it was inside the great hall of Balanus applied the principle of the Emerald Tablet. Again, the principles of the Emerald Tablet, you could say they're the foundation for spiritual alchemy. They're the words of spiritual alchemy. They're the verses, the principles, the way that we understand or shape alchemy into form. So or transform one thing into another. Okay, he soon gained a reputation as a great healer and a holy man, and the sick an infirm journey from throughout Greece to experience use uncanny power to heal through the presence alone. So in other words, being able to heal from mere presence, which I was talking about earlier, we have the power to transform anything or anyone from our mere presence. We all have that power. So it's not just like, oh, you have it or I have it. Everybody has the power to tap into this. But we've got to be able to work toward it. Okay. Good morning on Facebook. I don't know who's there. Please say good morning to me. I don't know who's there. It doesn't show me who's on for some reason. Okay. Balanus' fame grew so much that the saying about him became the proverb of Cappadocia. Where are you hurrying? People would ask anyone in a rush. Are you off to see the youth? To those who had a good fortune to witness the healing and the casting out of demons, it seemed as if Balanus concentrated on purifying the patients themselves in order to force illness or unwelcome spirits to take flight. It's Bestie. Good morning, Bestie. How are you? Yay. See, it's weird. As soon as you said good morning, it showed your face. I don't know why Facebook does that. Good morning, Wonder Me in the Yard. Or was it? Sorry. Wonder Me. Wait, Wonder Me, okay, laying in my yard, I don't know, sorry, but anyway, good morning. Okay, so to take flight, okay, purifying, okay, on several occasions, his silent purifying presence even quelled riots Once in mere appearances at violent confrontation between the cities of Pamphylia and, I can't even say these words, diffused the situation in matters of minutes. So at the age of 20, Balinus received a considerate inheritance on the death of his father. His mother had died years before. And Balinus felt he must remain free from worldly attachments and would never accept or carry money. So again, Linga, what's up? How are you? Oh, I haven't seen Linga in so long. I know, it's been crazy busy, right, Linga? We need to connect. So again, he had true faith in the great work. He let go of all attachment to materialism, which is one of the hardest things that we get to overcome as a human. Our attachments to things become the foundation or the root of our suffering. And that's anything. And okay, so there's Buddhism, right? Right there. We already see Buddhism arising within alchemy, the attachment piece to our material. And it's hard because we love our things. We love the things that we have, right? We want to sort of keep them and possess them. But the reality is we must let them go and not be non-attached. The attachment is the root of the suffering. It is what causes the suffering. And we know this, right? Again, I'm not saying anything that's new under the sun, but it never gets old in hearing it, right? As many times as we hear it, how many times do we fall back into it? All the time. All the time. We know it, right? And it's like in our minds, we hear it, we know it. We're like, yeah, we know, I know that. Okay, but do you really know it? In other words, have you experienced letting go? Truly letting go. So the question would be, and this happens in Christianity, there we go, another religious sect where it's like, leave all your goods behind and follow me. Have true faith. Now, if we think about like the birds and the bees and all that, they have true faith. They don't know anything other than faith, right? Like they don't sit there and contemplate like, oh, I need to hoard all this stuff. And if I don't, I'm going to die and I'm going to suffer. No, they just let it go. There's a book called Who Moved My Cheese? I don't know if you guys have ever read it. It's a tiny little book. Even kids can read it, right? It's even for kids. And it's about how us humans get attached to one thing, one way, and we don't expand. And when we get attached, we don't allow ourselves to actually open up our mind to new possibility. We don't allow our space to be opened up for new possibilities to exist. We sort of just stay in this loophole where I think our patterns continue to go over and over and over. And we're like dogs chasing our tail over and over and over. Okay. Moses Walker, good morning, Baldonado. Kindly inbox me. I have a private reading for you. Oh, okay. You do private readings. I don't know if you're still on here, Moses. Why don't you do one for me on here? Wouldn't be real private though, would it? Kind of be all out there in public. So Balinus was like, I'm letting it all go. I'm going to follow, this way of life, which is, the way of life is what? Through the Emerald Tablet, right? Give it all up. Okay. So he didn't want to accept the money. And so let's see, he felt he must remain free. Later, when admirers offered him huge sums of cash, he insisted that they give it to the poor. For him, the most detestable of all crimes was to take money from invoking or giving instruction about higher powers, which Emerald Tablet had shown him how to control. This is kind of how I feel about Spirit and Coffee. I don't ask for money, never ask for money, in terms of the podcast. Now, in other teachings, yes. So if you know, it's kind of hard, right? Because it's how do we surrender completely as spiritual teachers and say, we don't want no money. This is free information. Anybody should have access to this information, right? Where some people will, even in their podcast, right? Because I had talked about it. I didn't even realize that you can get coins on here and get money. And I've never asked for a dime from any person on these podcasts. Because the information that we're giving is meant for individuals to truly understand. That doesn't mean that we don't accept gifts. Now, Balinus didn't. He said, no, I don't give it to the poor. I trust in God fully. That is that, and walking the path is true surrender. That is ultimate surrender. That's ultimate faith. Most people will never get there, right? He wasn't walking around in poverty. He was walking around in abundance consciousness, knowing that he was going to be taken care of no matter what he did. Now, that to surrender that way is like, whoa. Right? It's like, oh my God, that's crazy. So for me, I generate money through other means. And that's the way it works for me. Now, in terms of teaching, right? Teaching the great work, I would never charge a person the great work. But instruction on time management, yes. On professional and personal development, yes. But on the great work, no. But I won't teach everybody everything I know, because most will not commit fully to the process, which is huge. It's a life commitment. It's a letting go of everything and saying, I commit fully to this work. Doing the great work never stops. It's not like you can just give it back. It's almost like ignorance is bliss, right? You can't just say, hey, I want all this wisdom, and then I want to walk through the veils of the high priestess, and I want to do all this work, and then I just, and then one day you just want to give it back. You can't undo what you already know. The only way is forward or through. So me teachings, right? I give very minimal teaching here, very surface level type of teaching in alchemy. There's deeper wisdom to be given, but not for everybody. Why? Because you have to be committed to the work, the great work, and it has to be a consistent thing. It can't just be a fad or something that's like, oh, this sounds so cool. I just want to do it because it's cool and it's the cool thing to do. Sometimes it's not so cool doing this work. Sometimes it's painful and we're going through the pits of hell. Right? And out of it comes our what? Philosopher's Stone, the Sorcerer's Stone, right? They call it Sorcerer's Stone in Harry Potter, but it's the Philosopher's Stone, right? It is the great work that we transmute these darker energies into something beautiful and shiny. You know, and people love the shiny, of course. They look at the shiny, they go, ooh, look at the shiny. Look at all the glamour and glitz. And yeah, but what did it take to get there? Did anybody think about that? Did anybody look into that? The journey that it took to get there was not so easy. How many storms were weathered? Now, this happens in our life regardless if we want to accept it or not. Alchemy is a natural process, right? It's based in natural law. We can't escape it. But if we understand it and know how to utilize it, right, then we start to be at one with it. And we can ride the wave, because there's a wave that we ride. And I had asked when I was taking this master's program, and I asked, how do we get on the wave and ride it out? How do I ride this wave? And the instructor trainer goes, well, that's a great question. How do you think you ride the wave? How do people ride waves? Well, they have to practice. So guess what? We get to practice. And I can tell you that people want all the glory without the practice. Not all people. Some people. They're looking for the next gimmick. Next gimmick, next trick, next thing. You got to commit to the work. That's the only way through. Sorry. You know, it's like even when, let's just even talk about the Matrix, when Neo took the pill, right? And it wasn't like he took the pill and everything was solved. No, it just became a bigger problem for him. No, he just had to fight everything. And he had to protect the people that were trying to survive. And he became, you know, he had to go in and do training. It wasn't the end for him. He didn't take the magic pill and everything dissolved. It just got worse. He had to transition into a whole new way of looking at life, a whole new paradigm. And that, if you look at the Matrix, really what they're talking about is taking a pill for a paradigm shift, a worldview. It's hard. Let's just think about this for religious people. It's a hard pill to swallow, right? There's a reason they say that. It's a hard pill to swallow when everything you've believed gets turned upside down and you start to question it. And I talked about spiritual emergency when people start to open up to they have these epiphanies, these spiritual awakenings, and it's like they took a pill. Well, that pill didn't provide them the remedy. It opened up a whole new can of worms, basically. That's what happened when Neo took the pill. It didn't solve everything. That's like alchemy. When you take the pill of alchemy, it doesn't just magically disappear all the bad stuff. No, guess what? Now you're looking at the bad stuff for what it is. You're looking at the stuff you call dark. And you're having to face it now. Total difference, right? People think they want this magic pill. They're constantly looking for it. They're looking to be happy and great all the time, and they're not. When people are like, I'm sad, I'm this, something's wrong with me, I say, no, it's not. That's part of human nature. It's who we are. And a lot of it has to do with attachment, like coming back or circling back to what he said. I get rid of all my worldly possessions because in the attachment comes the suffering. Again, not saying anything new, but reminding. It's a reminder. Now, asking yourself what you're so attached to that you might have to let go of so that you can release the suffering. Not easy, right? How do you feel about that, Linga? You got any words for me today? And by the way, oh, you want to call? I always let Linga call in. We're going to invite you right in. Oh, did I get you in time? Call back. I don't think I got you in time. Please do call again. I always enjoy having someone else to converse with instead of my own self. There you go. Invite you back in.
Hello.
Hi, good evening to you, because it's not morning where you're at.
Just me.
How goes it?
Good.
Good. So tell me, what's new? What's going on? Did something trigger you? Or did you have something to say about attachment?
Trigger? No. Yes. So I learned about Buddhism quite a long time ago. Went to a Catholic school, but they taught us about Buddhism. And then I went to Japan. And I visited Japan. And I learned a bit more about it. And then I actually worked with a guy from Malaysia that was Buddhist. Yeah. So I've worked with a few people who are Buddhist. And yeah, the whole, the lack of attachment is really fundamental to their own happiness. But my observation is that it's also a burden, that burden of wanting to be, like, it's a discipline, you know, to not be attached to things.
Sure.
So, yeah, I think when you said it's hard work, like, I think it is hard work, especially for Buddhists, because they have to, there's so many things in the world that, you know, you could possess or keep or love too much or whatever. So I think, like, yeah, it's a pretty hard gig. One of the guys I used to work with, he used to work on the wharf, and we used to have a lot of goods come in. And we used to get asked to go to court sometimes because we were holding goods up or whatever. And he used to delete all his emails every Friday, no matter what was in them, just delete the whole lot. And he'd have like hundreds in there. And I'd say, how are you doing this? And he's like, yeah, that's just my way of life. Like, I just get rid of everything. I have nothing. They will ring me if it's important. You know, it was his lifestyle. And it was a really cool way to live.
Right. It's free, right? Because, like, how could you go through all of that information and be able to even address every single thing, right? You couldn't. It just, like, drive you crazy or give you anxiety or whatever. But I want to circle back to the attachment to non-attachment, which could then lead to suffering as well, right? So, because there is an attachment. So we never really, and then that's in the practice of Buddhism, we never get over our attachments, because if we didn't have attachment, we would die. We have to eat, we have to drink to live in this body vessel. But it's practicing and learning how to overcome the attachment. So mastering that is what usually the discipline, like you said, that comes into it. It's like, how do I practice non-attachment? How do I, it doesn't mean that you're just like, I give up everything. Like some people will, some people have that, you know, strength to just give it all up and just let it go. And some people don't, some people need to practice in baby steps. So there are like ways to practice non-attachment in small ways. Like for instance, I had this beautiful coffee cup that I used to drink out of, and it was like my mug. I've even taken like photo shoots with it. I loved the mug. And one day it fell off the table and shattered. And I was so sad. But I knew that I had to be non-attached. And I was like, okay, it had its use, it had its life, and that's that. The end. And then I just moved on with my day. You know, I mean, that's one tangible thing, but think about a pet. If we lose someone we love, to practice that non-attachment in an event like that takes a lot of practice and a lot of work to move through. So, yeah, working through the non-attachment, but also not being attached to the attachment.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know.
Yeah, go ahead.
I've done quite a bit of this recently, you know, like I quit drinking, which has really got not much to do with drinking. It's actually got more to do with self-development, which I think most people that go sober, that's, you know, that's how they feel about it as well. Most people that I talk to.
Yep.
And then I quit my job and got another job. And, you know, after like a full career, and, you know, I won't say too much about what I do, but it's like a specialist career as a frontline person. And it takes a long time to get those skills. And when I made the decision to quit, it was a really tough decision, you know, like, because it was that attachment that I had to probably not just what I did, but unfortunately when you are working in an emergency setting, you tend to identify yourself to positions. You know, and it becomes like, I guess, an attachment that's a little bit deeper than just something physical. Like it becomes about values, and you know, you can become a bit blinded by that, you know. So you end up doing the job because you think that's what you should do. I think people in the military find it the same. People, doctors, people that leave careers where they're sort of in service roles.
Yes.
I think that they're very difficult careers to leave. But one of the things that struck a chord with what you said was that, like, the process of leaving is, it's growth, you know, and that's not free. You don't just get that. You have to earn it, you know.
Yeah, and it's difficult and challenging, right, because there's a couple of things too, because there's this distinction where people say, well, yeah, I know. That's why, and it's like everything that I ever teach is nothing new under the sun, right? There's nothing new under the sun. And millions, I mean, this has been written over time and time again, there's practices to help people do this. Now, people will say, you'll say, you know, your suffering's coming from your attachment. Oh, I know. But do you know? Do you truly know? Because knowing and actually embodying and experiencing the letting go and being non-attached and really understanding it, you can't understand your attachment until you actually let go. You can't understand growth until you fully let go and you step into something different and you surrender. But it's not easy. It's not an easy process for most individuals. It's not. And it's because we, it's like that Who Moved My Cheese. I don't know if you've ever heard of that book.
Yeah, I've actually just found the book the other day. I have a
copy. Oh, did you?
I hadn't read it for ages yet.
Yeah, okay, see, we're on the same wavelength. And it's funny because we hem and haw, we stay in one spot, we don't leave, and we're like, there's no more cheese here, right? And it's like, yeah, but there's an abundance of cheese over there, but you're so attached to it being this way and it has to be here that it's not. And we don't explore and see what's available to us. And I feel like, and I know that you will probably agree with this, Linga. When we travel, we start to see how small our little space is and how much there is to offer in the world. It kind of opens up our minds and our eyes to like, wow, I'm so attached to this, but there's so much more. There's all this experience here that I can let go of. There's always an abundance, right? Right now, the world, we're taking away, and I don't want to get into that, but there's still an abundance of resources here on this planet. There's still an abundance of beauty to look at and marvel at. There's still an abundance of food, believe it or not, to eat. It may not be the food we want to eat, but it's there. And we have jungles with food that we can eat, vegetation we can eat. There's an abundance. So what we're attached to is the comfortable. We get attached to being comfortable. And we're afraid that if we leave that comfortable, that we won't find refuge again, or we won't find that place of comfort again, that we're going to leave it behind. So it takes a bit of courage, right? And to be uncomfortable. Tell me about your new job. How is that going for you?
I can't because I haven't started yet, but there was a quote that I found.
Okay.
I'm starting next week.
Are you excited? Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
I am excited. I am. But this quote's what resonated with me. I found it the other day. It said, the most profound personal growth does not happen while you're reading a book or meditating on a mat, of which I did both. It happens in the throes of conflict when you are angry, afraid, and frustrated. It happens when you are doing the same old thing and you suddenly realize you have a choice.
Wow. Yep. So, and that's
cool.
It is, right? Because the darkness, or people want to call it the darkness, but the shadow, the uncomfortable, the confliction, the tower events, the big transformations, the things that totally deconstruct the foundations that we've created are the moments of excitement for someone who's, so here's the deal, someone who understands tarot and someone who understands alchemy, they're excited when they see the tower. They understand what it means because they know what it means. They understand that what's happening is it's being deconstructed so that you can rebuild on a new foundation, right? Because it's almost like the big bad wolf, you know. The second piggy, you know, they have these houses, and when our foundation gets blown over, we're like, oh, that didn't work. We need to create a new foundation. And so we're learning how to build a solid foundation in which to build upon. And sometimes we have to let the tower fall in order to do that. So it's like that deconstruction. It's the chaos. It's the letting go of all that stuff. And for an alchemist, we're excited because we understand how to build. First of all, we know how to rebuild. So we're not afraid. We're like, oh yeah, let it fall. Sometimes we even intentionally rip things apart in order to recreate. But it's because we're not afraid. We know we're creators. We're like, oh yeah, we can step into a new creation. The new creation being what? Well, in alchemy or in tarot, the next card is the star. The star card being that you get everything that you dreamed of. So sometimes we're wanting what we're dreaming. We're like, I'm dreaming of this. I want this so bad. But we're not willing to like let go of the shit that's keeping us from getting it. It's kind of weird. We don't realize that we're our own worst enemy. And that our attachments are the keeping us from really stepping into that soul purpose or divine purpose or freedom or whatever it is that we're wanting or we're calling forth, right? So, yes, the freedom. Go ahead.
I went years stuck. Like, I went years and years just stuck in the same patterns. And I think a lot of that tower thing has got a lot to do with intent. So if you have to choose to want to see that process start, even though you might not know how and why, what it will look like. It's that whole position of possibly curiosity or just despair that makes you go, I've got to change something. And for me, I was stuck in this pattern for lots of different things, you know, habitual patterns, work patterns, home patterns, whatever else, environmental patterns, the way I was living, the way I was interacting with nature, at least exercise, everything. And I decided to change one part of it, which was, for me, was drinking. So I just said, I'm not going to do that anymore. And then that sort of started a whole heap of other things. So I think that the intent, you have to set intent somewhere with something for something to change. You can't just magically expect something's going to change for you. And if it does change for you, it's probably going to be somewhat like you're going to have less control, you know, or it's going to be more adaption time.
Yes, what you're speaking to, and yes, I agree. You have to be able to shift and change and recognize your patterns. Patterns are important to recognize in your own life and other people's life. When you do that, you become the master of so many things. It's pretty crazy. You master certain things in recognizing patterns. Your own first, and then once you recognize your own, you recognize others. And it's pretty cool. So that's like a whole other section, right? But like you said, you're changing and transforming and you let go of drinking, right? Which then allowed you to dive deeper into who you are as an individual. Now, and we've talked about it before, any psychedelic drugs, any downer drugs, any upper drugs, really are a false connection to the divine. Now, I'm not going to say that the psychedelics don't facilitate a connection to maybe interdimensional spaces, because I believe in some of those medicines, but used, overused, not good. Alcohol is an avoidance of the self, and it's an avoidance of our own divine potential, really. And it's scary because we do that to numb ourselves out. Now, I was an alcoholic, you know that. And I've been 10 years sober, which has been, yeah. And see, and the thing is that I was trying to practice all this work, but I knew that I knew it wasn't right. I knew it wasn't real. And I had to be honest with myself and say, what is it that, why do I keep doing this? What is the pattern? Why? And it meant that I had to look at, like you said, your patterns. Those patterns are the ones that are, you don't want to deal with. You're just sweeping them under the rug with drugs and alcohol. That's what we do. We sweep those under the rugs. Hey, Christina. I didn't know you were on here. But we sweep those under the rug. And we say, oh, yeah, you know, if I could just pretend this doesn't exist, I can still focus on my spiritual divine potential. No, because they're part of you. They're the same. And if you don't deal with that patterning, right, you're never going to actually shift it and change it. which is Linga, the hardest thing to work on. I was talking about this with my sister, in fact, yesterday, about patterns. And I was telling my mom, you know, Tanya, she's my sister, she's just doing the same patterns. My mom's like, I don't know. You know, my mom, she's not really, she gets this work, but she doesn't get this work. My sister does. And then my sister calls and we talk, and she tells me exactly what I told my mom, because her and I are very, very interconnected. And she's like, you know, it's my patterns, and I know that I need to fix it, but we fall into the same patterns regardless. Our same root stories exist. They don't go away, and they're not going to go away. That's the problem, is people want them to go away. So they find and they search for these remedies that are just going to make them disappear, and they don't disappear. That's not the point. The point is that they're part of our story. And then how do we master them? How do we work through them? How do we choose differently? We have a choice, right? That's what you said. We said, you all of a sudden, we recognize in that poem you read, we have a choice. Like, all of a sudden you realize you have a choice. And you get to be the one who drives the choice. So again, it's taking back your personal power, your personal responsibility. And now you're taking on your life in a whole new direction, which is exciting, because I want to see what happens, or, you know, what's to come of this, because it's a whole new journey, right? There's going to be a whole new patterning there. You're going to be dealing with different people, different personalities, different instructions and ways of doing work. You're going to be dealing with different schedules, maybe. Actually, are you going to have a different schedule? What is your schedule going to be like, Linga?
Yeah. I mean, I've been wearing a uniform for the best part of 20 years. And so, it's no longer waiting on something's emergency, and it's a nice change. You know, like I took some radios out of my house today, and man, felt amazing. You know,
yes.
You got to remember, I've been living with these things in my house because of a sense of duty, really. Duty keeping me in the job, but you know, that's what it takes. That's what it takes to do the job. So, I think that that's a really big shift, and that's very hard to comprehend. But it's funny, you know, like there's a lot of things happen at once, when these things start to happen, you know, other things happen as well. You know, like my poor dog, he's, I'm going to put him down next week.
And so,
that whole attachment thing, you know, I've had him for 16 years, so.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
A long time.
Right.
He's still pretty lively, but, you know, he's getting pretty old. He must have some other issues. So, you know, I've been told that he's crook. I just didn't see it, or I didn't want to see it. So there's an example of something else. You know, you don't want to see what it is.
Yes. Good morning.
But you don't want to see it.
Yeah, and it's hard. And letting go, so the attachments that we have to our things, the hardest ones, like, obviously, are when a life is taken, right? That's, like, the hardest thing, because because we love our people. We love our people, and we love them deeply, even if we're pissed at them, right? And that's why, you know, that's why it's like, don't get mad over petty things. Forgive quickly, because you never know how much time you have with an individual. So if you really love this person, you know, if they just keep, you know, not throwing the trash or something, and that's like, get over it, right? That's material. And at the end of the day, we love our people. And when we lose them, it's a permanent thing. that's the most permanent. And that's even with animals, right? Animals, plants, all that, because there's a consciousness within them. Now, I'm not saying consciousness doesn't exist in everything. There's a paradigm or a worldview that believes that consciousness exists in everything. And I'm not saying that it doesn't, but there's a different, there's inanimate, inanimate objects, right? And when we have, if we have like this connection to a creature, even a tree, with consciousness, that we know that it has some sort of wisdom inherently in it, and that we can see it and view it. When we lose that connection, it's a permanent connect. It's a permanent, it goes away. It's not coming back, right? We can feel the energy. Now, that's a whole other mystical piece of it, because people will say, well, I feel the energy of my loved one still around me. I can see it. There's people, mediums, who talk to people who have passed on. And that's a whole other worldview and belief. But it's still the material part of that individual's not there. They're no longer available. Or the animal. That attachment's the hardest one, because it's final. Which is why I always talk about my secret sauce: forgiveness, love, and gratitude. And usually it's gratitude, forgiveness, gratitude, and love. And that's usually the order it comes in when people are going through a process, right? They forgive the person, then they realize that they're thankful for the thing or the person or the whatever situation. And then love seems to arise out of that. So having that secret sauce, right? And with our pets, our animals, which I've been hanging out with Rocco's dog. I have my friend's dog, Rocco, who's amazing, and it's he and I are just buddies, right? And I can look into his eyes and see his consciousness. I can see how kind and protective, right? He's a protective dog. And to lose that connection, it's hard. It's not easy. And so some people don't have, so again, some people might not have compassion. Oh, it's just a pet. It's not just a pet. This is a living creature. This is something that we shared a moment with. We could look into each other's eyes and we get each other, right? We understand each other. Or there's that loyalty that's there that you don't get from some. Most humans are, they're not always 100% loyal. But pets are. We understand what true loyalty means through our pets, especially dogs, right? It's like, wow, if people could... If people could be that loyal, I'm not saying we should be dogs. Go ahead, Linga.
It's unconditional.
Mm-hmm. Yes, they teach us unconditional love.
Lesson in dogs.
Yeah. Amen. And I agree. And I absolutely, I love dogs and even cats. I never used to, but I love cats now even. For me, it's very...
other things.
Oh, yeah. Yes. They teach you non-attachment, cats.
Yeah.
So, but there's the consciousness in it, but the attachment, again, of letting go of that energy is not easy. So, again, if someone like listeners, people on here, if you're going through, let's say something where you've lost somebody, you know, and I had a person say, oh, we'll get over it, right? My fur baby is my best friend. Oh, how cute. Angel, good morning. I don't know if you're still on here, but, you know, people say, well, get over it. Why aren't you over it? You know, or they've lost a loved one that it's like you can't get over it. And you shouldn't, people shouldn't be saying that, because it's a final thing. And it's that process is probably, I would say, one of the hardest processes to get through in this waking world, is to lose a person that you care about. That is a forced lesson. Like you were talking about earlier, well, there's these lessons where if we don't surrender, it's going to happen anyway. We know it. We feel it. You know that your dog is you're saying, I can't, I know he's about to pass. And I can help him along the path, or I can wait until I just find him, right? But we know. And when we surrender, that's the hard part, right? That's the hard part of letting go. But here's the cool thing with alchemy. And here's how we learn to utilize the non-attachment. We let go before the universe forces us into submission, because that becomes worse. That can be worse and even more detrimental. Because...
But it'll just take longer.
It takes longer. It's more painful. And when the chaos comes, we're not prepared. So you can be prepared for a tower event to come. You can prepare yourself. The way to do it is, like, for instance, if someone is sick, right? My grandmother, this is an example, or your dog is like the same example. We know they're sick. So rather than try to hold on to make them live longer, you know, we have to be able to tell them it's okay to let go so that they're not suffering, like pain suffering, body suffering, where we love them. And we talk to them and we say everything that we need to, right? And we're very fortunate when we have those periods of time with the people that are sick that we know are about to pass, because that's a gift, actually. Because now... That's
the beauty of cancer.
It is. And it's a gift because we get to tell them we love them before they go. So that's an example, and it's a very extreme example. But when the universe throws us into one, it's like what happened to me with my high school sweetheart who got shot, killed overnight. It wasn't told to me. I didn't know it was going to happen. It's just he's here one day, gone the next, right? That is like a whirlwind of crazy. Because then it's like the questions come in. Did I say everything I needed to say? Was I did this, that, the other? What regrets might have I had? So that's the difference. I mean, it's a huge, when we talk about it, it's like crazy, right? It's like one extreme to the next. And it's an extreme way of understanding it. But that is it. And we could apply that to all of the things in our life. Not just death, but the death of a job. Right, the death of the death of anything,
the death of the old world.
Yes, that's a huge one. Oh my god, that one I could go on a lecture forever. It's like let's step into the new
world. People are doing.
I know
people are grieving, and they don't realize it.
Oh, Linga, yes, you're so right on point right there. That's really, you're right. It's a worldwide grieving of the old paradigm. People want things back to go back to the way they were, and they will not. I keep telling people they're not. Things are changing. We have to change. We have to allow the new worldview and paradigm to shift. And the ones that are holding on are suffering.
Keep going.
The what?
Yeah, the problem is,
go ahead.
Is that, because I know you're careful about how you talk about this, so let me put forward a concept that, you know, my dog's about to die. He's been with me for a long time, so I have patterns of behavior with him and things that we do together and things that I enjoy, and they've been really good, right? But he's now at a point where he's not that well. So I don't have the same level of enjoyment as I think neither does he. On top of that, his environment is affected because of those things.
Sure.
If you think about population in
sure.
And our burden on the natural environment.
Yes.
Increased by orders of magnitude in the last 10 to 30 years. Like extinctions are orders of magnitude higher. Impact to ozone and climate change and everything that's impacted, which is basically anthropological, that's why it's occurring, is we're using our resources quicker than we can. Something has to change if we're to survive that level of onslaught that we're just eating the capital. You know, we need new technology like green energy. We need new alternatives to the way that we live to be able to reduce the burden on the environment. The issue I've got is we have old world leaders trying to lead that process.
Sure.
And the old world leaders, and I'm not criticizing anyone in particular, it's a very difficult thing to do, is to lead that many people.
Sure.
Whether it's mass media, it's power brokers, it's people in government, or it's people with money, or it's medical, whatever it is, these leaders that we have in our landscape, they're using what we're missing is that hope. You know, we're missing the good news for a change.
Mm-hmm.
And people are not being led through what's happening effectively. Like, what's happening is we're changing the way we're living so that we can live more sustainably. But that's the message that's got to be sold.
Sure.
And we haven't got anyone courageous enough to stand up and say, we cannot continue to eat the environment at the pace we're eating it at. You know, I just read Jared Diamond's Collapse. I don't know if you've read that before.
No, I don't think so. No, go ahead.
Even in the first couple of chapters, he talks about most societies don't crumble slowly. Like, pick one, the Aztecs, pick the Mayans, pick, you know, the Israelites, whatever. Just go pick a society or a culture.
Mm-hmm.
It's usually a mass event, and it's usually quick.
Yes.
You know, there's these old theories that we used to have in biology that used to say, okay, say we had a block of dirt, and we procreated and we lived off that block of dirt. Eventually, we get to a point where we're living off the resources to their maximum capacity that we can build them. Because there's more of it. Like, we have a family of 10 kids. We can only make so much wheat. And therefore, it's going to be a point where we just start using what's there until we run out of resources and then we die. Right?
Yeah.
Because there's no more space. So they call it a T curve or a P curve or something, where it plateaus. And they say there's no net growth and there's no, like, net death equals net growth, and we just stay at the same amount, and then we crumble. What Jared Diamond was talking about was that doesn't happen at all. It's usually a mass event, and then everything falls over. So something in the chain falls down, and then the whole lot just crashes.
Yeah, it's called it's called a cosmic tower event, where we don't surrender and we don't change and everything crumbles. Yeah, that's a cosmic tower event, and that's on a global scale, and we've seen it happen. And yes, I am careful, but no, I'm not careful. Here's how I see it, though: we are like bacteria. I laugh at some of the stuff I say sometimes, but we are.
Any biological system.
Yes, we're like bacteria, right? We just multiply, or it could even be like a parasite in some way, where we just consume, and then we kill ourselves. So that's great. You know what I mean? It's like, if you eat up the host, then guess what? The host dies and so do you. Mother Earth being our host, right? And us being maybe the parasite or the bacteria, however you want to see it, that yes, we are at that critical point. And yes, we continue to create the same things, but humans don't learn. And this is almost, to me, it's sad. At the same time, it's part of the process. At the same time, like the way I see it, like pattern. Right, we're in this stew of karma, where from the spiritual perspective, I see it as that way. You know, when we look at it from a broader perspective, that we continue to create our patterns the same. It's like you said, patterns are hard to, you know, change. We continue to see ourselves at the same point in history over and over again, and yet we choose the same shit over and over again. And it's our patterning. Now, there are some who don't. There are some who always arise, and this goes into archetypal patterning and all that stuff. Okay, and this is from the broader perspective. With the archetypal patterns that show up, there are people who don't agree with the systems and who are creating new worlds. They're trying to create and capture a world that works in harmony with nature, with the divine principles and divine laws, without taking more than is needed. Okay, so we see that, and those are the people that survive. That's why the species of the human race has survived, because there are these individuals who get it, and then they sort of go off into the jungles and they learn how to live off the land. And then that's where they're at. And they're not using technology. We had technology. If you look over and over again, I mean, pyramids, all this stuff, we had the technology to do greater things at ancient times. We weren't primitive.
We had it at higher levels.
Yeah, we weren't primitive. And we screwed up. And that's what happened. And everything got destructed. I mean, there's the stories of Gilgamesh, right? We have the flood stories that Noah, all these flood stories happened for a reason. And I'm almost guessing that a nuclear warfare, we have a place up in, and I can't even remember it is, where people died from radiation, which was probably a nuclear power plant in ancient times. And I'm guessing what it did is it heated the earth and the earth flooded because of it. Like, that seems reasonable to me. And we did it. I don't think that it was some cataclysmic event that happened and the earth did it. I think we caused the chain events to happen. And then boom, we flooded the whole earth on ourselves. We flooded our own self. And then the world recreated itself again into this new paradigm, right? But we had people who were aware that this was coming, prophecy. And in that prophecy, we had individuals who said, hey, there's a flood coming. We're going to, we know what's going on with these crazy people. And we don't agree. We're going to bail the hell out of here. And they did. And the human species survived. And now here we are thousands and thousands of years later, maybe even millions of years later, and we're doing the same shit. It looks different, but it's the same. There's nothing new under the sun. We keep repeating the patterns. And then on top of that, right, when we're looking at the patterning, we have what I think is karma and what I think is reincarnation, where this is just my worldview, doesn't have to be yours, but I believe that reincarnation is our ability right now to step into the technical digital era or to actually go back to the earth in natural law. We want to live by the laws of just science alone and technology alone, and we can't because it doesn't honor the sacred feminine. We've lost all connection to intuition, to love, and to our heart. And we're so science-based that we're such in a patriarchal model. And not only that, we're in the wounded patriarch. We're not even in the healed patriarch. The patriarch in its healed form protects. But now we're causing harm. So now we have leaders in a position right now, when we look at our leaders, who are sociopaths, psychopaths, they're narcissists, because we have the wounded masculine leading our world right now. If we were being led by the healed sacred masculine, they would be protecting. They're not protecting. So we get to honor the sacred feminine through love, kindness, compassion, and understanding. And those things lead to creation and intuition. And that creation then can be led to a place or a healing center or a place on the land where people start to cultivate and actually get back to harmony with nature, one with nature. So there are people who are doing it, but it's tapping into those people who are doing it. I know people doing it. I know people actually live off the land. Yeah.
Yeah, same. I don't know that they're mutually exclusive.
Tell me what you mean.
I don't subscribe to technology and nature being mutually exclusive. I think we're better than that. I don't think that one is going to cause the destruction of the other. My view is that we're much better than we understand, and that technology, you know, I think technology without the profit drivers involved has the potential to be able to make us more connected to nature. That's my view, because of all the time we save and, you know, the access to places. And I'm a bit more optimistic about that. And I think that the sacred feminine will prevail anyway. I don't think that it's going to be outdriven by the wounded patriarchy that exists. I can see. Yeah.
Sure.
I see what you're talking about, but I just don't think that it's not long for the world, you know, like the wounded patriarchy has an end, and it
doesn't end. The story doesn't end. No. Go ahead.
I was just going to say that I think the leadership style will change shortly, because we're trying to drive people with fear.
Okay, perhaps it will and perhaps it won't. But if we look at history, and if we look at, and even indigenous cultures, right? Indigenous cultures have this point. So, you know, I live in New Mexico, right? And so in the cultures, they talk about the time of this big transformation and what's going to happen. And they talk about the time where the rainbow children come together, which means all walks of life come together to protect. And we even have Standing Rock, right? We have all these different things, the water protectors that are rising. We have all these people, especially in the area, coming up and saying, no more. But here's the deal. In their myth stories, right, and in their prophecies, they do talk about a time where we get to choose. So we do have to choose. That is the point. We have to let go of something. We have to sacrifice something in order to create a new world, right? Technology itself, I know, and I hear your optimism. I'm not saying I'm not optimistic. I totally believe that we can have new leadership. But the reality is, we don't. The reality is, no one's stepping up. It may happen, but when we look at it from the lens of reality, there are narcissists, psychopaths, and sociopaths leading all of these systems right now. And the only way that we can, I feel, okay, and it may not be the only way, Linga, so you're absolutely right. And I do believe technology is good. I use technology. This is technology we're using right now to have this conversation, right? I'm not fully free of it. I'm still living in both worlds. But I believe that if we're going to heal, we have to make the choice. I mean, eventually we're going to have to spring off, because I don't know that leadership's going to change. I don't know if the people that, so let's just look at it from this perspective. Who's going to overthrow the leadership? Those people are narcissists. They'll kill people at any cost to keep their power. They will kill you. Okay, how many people will die? Think about it from the place of Christ. Christ was he was talking about a whole new paradigm. He was speaking a whole new language. He was telling people love is the answer. And what happened? He got crucified. They're like, hell no.
But that's, you're thinking a short game there.
I'm not thinking a short game. I'm just talking about what has happened in the past historically, right? That it's yeah. Go ahead.
Him dying actually showed everybody that.
Yeah, but we're still doing the same shit. It didn't change anything. Yeah. We're at the same point again. we could preach it, but okay. So tell me what you think. Okay. So, and it's okay, because for me, it could be a prophecy that I see the world going. Tell me how you see the world going then. I want to hear your point of view. Go ahead.
Well, I just think that there's an eternal battle of love and war.
Mm-hmm. Like,
you know, you can call the narcissist whatever, you can lump them together in the same shit show, but we all know, you know, we all know what it represents. And it's this, you know, spiritual battle between good and evil.
Sure.
And that's, you know, it's that whole light workers and, you know, it's people have been talking about the sufferers. I don't pretend to understand it to the depth that you do, but what I do know is that, the absence of light is the only reason they exist. And people, if they're being driven to fear everything, they will get sick and die.
Sure.
They're living in fear, right?
Yes.
Eventually, people will wake up to that. It will take, there will be a lot of collateral. Like, that lesson is the same as the tower, not seeing it coming. But people will wake up because their environment's changing. Humans might be dumb and take a long time to learn. When their environment changes, there'll come a point where they wake up to it. We've been talking about climate change for 30 years. 30 years we've been talking about climate change.
And then, so, wait, doing what change? I'm sorry. Which one?
Climate change.
Climate change. Okay, sorry. Okay. Yeah, yes.
30 years we've been talking about it. Only now are we starting to see policy. Taken a generation.
Mm-hmm.
When I was at school, like I was born in the early 80s, when I was at school, we were learning about greenhouse gases in primary school. The discussions have started, you know. I think we've got to, you know, our leadership, that old style stuff, they can kill as many people as they want. There will be the time will come for where the people won't accept it. The time will come, and I'm a lot more optimistic about, you know, our connections to nature and stuff like you talked about, that we've talked about Indigenous cultures before. You know, I went into parts of Australia that people still living like they did 20 to 50,000 years ago.
Sure.
They've got a bit more, you know, movement, travel, and a bit of technology to help them, but they're still working off the same values as they did 50,000 years ago.
Right. They realize that they don't need technology to be one with nature. That's the point that I'm making.
They're using it.
Using it? How? Tell me how they use it.
So they don't need it, right?
Yeah, they don't.
That whole, like, if you want to go right back to the attachment thing you were talking about at the beginning with the Buddhist stuff.
Right.
They're not attached to it.
Right.
You can go out into those places and there's cars just parked up because they ran out of fuel. They're not attached to it. They don't drive, they don't have any self-drive to go find more fuel to be able to make this thing work again. It's just, it got me here.
Right.
Where I need to be.
It's because they. It's
if I need it again.
Yeah, because they're at one with nature. They connect with nature, and that's what I'm saying. It's we have to return back to. So what you're saying is exactly what I'm saying. It's the same thing.
Yes,
It's a return to divine, sacred nature because that is where it exists. Right, is in nature. The law of nature, God's law is nature's law, because it was born from God. We created man-made laws, which have created all of this craziness that we have today. Man-made law is man's law. So I don't follow man's law. I follow God's law. And God's law is natural law. That is the law, right? If you look at nature, it lives by a set of laws. If we followed nature by the set of laws, we wouldn't be in the predicament that we are. So there will be a return to the earth, but I don't think it's an overthrow. See, that's where I think we differ in what we're saying. I don't believe they're going to overthrow leadership. They're going to create a different world. That's the difference. I believe, and it's not that I'm not optimistic. I believe that these leaders have the ability to actually overcome their internal demons. But will they? I don't know. That's to find out. How do I give back? How do I support people in waking up and remembering who they are? Through spirit and coffee, through my divine work that I'm here to do. It's why I do this. I don't just do it because it's fun. You know, I do it because it's a calling. I've been told this is what you're going to do. This is how you're going to support people. Right. And I do it one person at a time, literally. I have like two people that follow me and I do it two people person at a time where, you know, and then you do have other individuals when we look at that are saying, let's wake up. And for me, I question those that have millions of followers because I'm like, where are they misdirecting and misleading people? Whose agenda are they going by? Who's paying them to say the things that they're saying? What kind of spell? This goes into deeper teachings of esoteric wisdom, which is the programming that's utilized. Now, yes, it's a fear-based programming. Turn off your TVs. Guess what? I don't watch TV. My TV's never on. All day long, I am not watching TV. I am in a master's program. I'm reading, right? I'm doing my sacred geometry. I'm working on my company. I don't watch TV. Turn off the TV. That's what we need to be telling people. If we truly want to connect, turn off the TV, shut off all that programming, program yourself with nature, go take a walk and look at the trees. What did you learn from the trees? What did you learn from the mantis that fell at your front at your feet the other day? What did it teach you? What did you learn at Kung Fu? Get involved in other things. Turn off the damn TV because that's where they're programming people. Turn off your radios. Turn off all of those things, right? And what are you tuning into, right? And that's kind of the message I'm hearing you say is like, it's people that are tuning into this stuff because I can guarantee you if you're turning into that and you're not just paying attention to your own internal world, you're being driven by fear. That's, of course, what they do. They've used fear forever. That's why I don't watch TV. I can't even stand TV. I can't even stand the sound of it. And by TV, I'm talking about the commercials because I will say I do watch certain shows. There are certain shows I watch. I watch two shows and that's it. Or movies. Those are the three things I do watch. And I analyze.
Housewives.
Huh?
It's not Hollywood Housewives, is it?
Oh, God, that's my mom. I love this show. Go to the park. You're right, Spirit. Yeah, thanks. The Rise of the Lion. I love that. The Rise of the Lion. There you go. Some fire energy rising. What about the Phoenix rising? A lot of fire rising in women. I love it. Us divine, sacred women and fire is a. It's a good thing. my mom's all into that stuff, and she goes on, and I'm like, I can't handle. But I just listened to her because I love her. It's my mama. You know, it's like, okay, mom, but at least she's not being programmed by fear. And if that's her entertainment, then by all means, go ahead. If she tells me she's funny, she'll be like, this person and that person. I'm like, mom, I don't know these people. She acts like she knows them. So I'm like, okay.
Yeah. Oh. I was really worried the last few days, particularly in the last week. Uh-huh. What world I've brought my children into.
Uh-huh.
You know, and even had hindsight thoughts about, you know, maybe I shouldn't have had kids before, but that's, you can't undo that. But, you know, I thought about that. And I was like, you know, I don't want them to have to suffer through the next generation of the adjustment. Let's call it adjustment. let's not downplay it or upplay it too much. It'll be an adjustment. And, you know, I was really worried about it. And after talking to you today, I've been able to reconsider that position. And I think if I can just connect them back to nature, most of the answers are out there.
Yes. Yes.
Enough of the answers are out there.
Yes. Reconnect them to nature. And it's hard because, okay, so maybe they're and where you're at, your circumstances are different, I know, in terms of you know, what's going on in the world right now and our world leaders and how they're running certain systems. So, you know, maybe it's not as easy to go to the park and just hang out or whatever it is, right?
And laugh. It's headed your way.
The what?
I said, don't laugh. It's headed your way.
Yeah, I'm not laughing at all. I'm just not laughing. But what I am doing is I'm taking caution and know what I need to do. Like, I'm set. I know where I need to go. And I know what I need to do if something happens. I can go and I can live off the land. It's not going to be an easy transition, but will I do it? Yes, I will. And if I die, okay, well, I'd rather die that way. That's how I feel. I'd rather die that way than at the hands of someone forcing me and not giving me my choice, right? I have choice.
Well, and in all fairness, Nat, it's harder as a parent.
Sure.
The burden of what you can and can't do for your children, you know?
Sure. And that's something I personally can say that I don't know. And I commend all the parents these days. Like, that's one thing that I'm just like, I don't even know how parents are doing it right now in this day and age. And even people that are bringing new babies into the world. And, you know, but here's the deal. Even if it's connecting, like you talked about hope. Where's the hope? You are the hope. Here's the deal. And this is kind of what we do as humans. Okay. And I'm just going to throw it out there. We are waiting for someone to freaking save us. No one's going to save you. You save you. You save you. How? By connecting. Connecting to it. Right? We create our reality. How? We have to understand the language. We have to know who we are. It's not an easy process. Like I can't explain it enough to, it's really hard sometimes for me to try to get people to see it, right? Like, how do we see and shape our reality? You have the power to do that, but it takes work. It's not just not going to be given to you. You have to understand certain things. Who are you at the macrocosm, at the microcosm? What is your fractal patterning? What is your soul map? How do you get your way back there? Those are like big questions that people are like, what the hell are you talking about? People are like, I don't even know what that means. Well, it starts within, but the connection is there. Even if it means going to your backyard and playing with the tiny bit of dirt you might have, because it might come to that. It's possible. They're like, this is what you have. Guess what? God, nature still exists in the dirt. A grain of sand is hope, right? We are the hope. We have to bring the hope. Just like you're talking to your, we might need it someday. Yeah. Just like your children. Your children, I can tell you this, Linga, it doesn't matter how scary the circumstances are. If you can get them to believe in the mystery of magic and imagination, they will transcend all the fear. Anything can be magical. You could take them on a journey. And I'll tell you, I used to do this when I was a kid. I do it as an adult. You would think I was a child. You get me with a bunch of kids. And before you know it, we're building forts out of I don't know what and tents inside the house. And there's a mystery and there's something hidden. And we're going to go do this and we're going to go do that. And take them on a journey. And it's a magical world to them. You have to bring the magic. You get to. You're the leader of your family. You get to lead your family how you want to. Doesn't have to be what the government tells you it needs to be. Imagination is the most powerful thing we have. Our hope comes from our imagination, right? Our imagination takes us to other dimensions, times, and spaces. People are constantly talking about, I want to be interdimensional, but then they're worried about what's happening in society. Well, I thought you're interdimensional. Well, go to the other dimension then. What are you doing in this one if you don't like it? But go to your interdimensional space and time. You don't have to be stuck or bound to this law or to these worlds. You don't. There's a whole other sacred geometry. I mean, there's, and this just goes on and on and on and on and on. Why do you think this podcast can go on for the rest of the world, for the rest of my life, and I can just talk and talk and talk and talk and talk? There's three different directions, but you are the hope. Just always remember that. Anybody who's on here, remember, you are the hope. You are. No one's going to bring you hope. Hope is not inherently in anything or anyone. It's in you, right? You can't find it externally. It exists at the core of your being. You are the hope. You are the love. You are the imagination. You are the one who gets to create the story. There are people in history, okay? So there are people in history that people continue to talk about. They lived in a whole new, they lived in their own world. Nobody could understand them, but they couldn't be touched unless they were actually murdered. And they, like Leonardo da Vinci, what world did he live in? He didn't live in the world of policy and politics. He pretended to, and he did shit he wasn't supposed to, right? He was doing stuff in the church, in the cathedrals with the cadavers and doing all kinds of stuff he wasn't supposed to. He was sneaking around and meddling in places. He lived in a different world view. Nobody could even meet him where he was.
Tesla was the same.
So here's the deal. Okay, I want to say this, okay? Because I'm getting so passionate, Lingo. Sorry. I'm like, you're probably like, oh my God, Natalie, stop. I'm passionate because I want people to understand this so badly. I want them to know that they are enough and that you guys have the power to create your own reality. Stop living. Okay, here's the deal. I said it yesterday on my podcast. If you're not living in your reality, you're living in somebody else's. If you're not programming your own reality, somebody else is programming it for you. Stop it. Stop it. How do you stop it? You program yourself. Look at the language you're using. Look at the conversations you're having. Who are you talking with? What is the conversation? I mean, this takes complete full self-awareness. Now, Lingo, when you're able to do this and understand the worldview in which you live in, you can actually create your own reality where these narcissists and all these other people can't even see you. You're not even on their radar. They don't even see you. They can't. It's an interesting thing, I promise you. But to experience is different. To know it is one thing, to experience is different. So how do you experience that, especially for your kids, especially in this time, to create another world for them that is not inside the current world being fed to you?
Yeah. You know what, Nat? What an awesome chat. What an awesome chat.
You're like, I'm tired.
It's like 1:30 in the morning.
I know it is, and I know you're tired, and I'm over here preaching to you. I love it. You're like, I didn't know all that. I love it. I know you well enough. I know you well enough. Lingo's like, oh, too much overload.
It was a good chat.
I know. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to get so preachy on it, but. I care about you. I care about the rise of light. I care about everybody that gets on here. Really, I do. I'm very passionate about it.
I've got something to take from that.
Good.
I've got something to take from that. So that's good. Good. That was a useful exercise. Thank you for getting me to ring in.
I start getting very passionate and kind of, it's not yelling.
It's fine. No, it's fine. If it was daytime, I'd be able to talk for another 2 hours. But
I think it's all ready for bed. Okay. Well, now that I've given you a lot of information, you've given me a lot. I know you have to go to sleep. I know that. I appreciate you and getting on here and communicating this a lot better when someone gets on here and we're able to have a dialogue. So I just leave. This is, I'll leave you with this. This is my hero, my warrior's code of honor that I recently been gifted. And I leave you with safe passage, refuge, and protection. There you go. You're welcome. And the same to you, right? The Rise of Lions, same to you, those on Facebook as well. Everybody. Okay. So you have safe passage.
I appreciate it.
You are protected. And everybody who is going through some crazy stuff, remember, you are all protected. That's it. Simple. Awesome. Have a good night. And thank you guys for joining. And I love you guys so much. And this is a very long podcast, but I will see you guys later. Love and light. Have a great Wednesday. Is it Wednesday? Oh my God, I don't even know what day it is. Have a great Wednesday. I'll see you soon. Bye-bye.